Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
An amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's having a great weekend and a very safe weekend. We have a great show for you tonight. This is a very interesting topic, and I'm really excited to talk about this. One quick thing, though, I want to mention that kind of led up to this whole thing. We're going to be talking about education and using music as an educational tool, not just for the music itself, but also for just learning in general. And we'll get into more detail about that. Last week we had Steve Vai on, and he was talking about he has an organization, Make a Noise, where they get guitars to kids that can't afford them and equipment so that they can play. And he has his Vai Academy, which is more specializing where you guys learn. So education was a real big thing with him too, which kind of sets up this show and next week's show, which is all about music, learning guitar and different ways of doing that. But I just wanted to mention, I got an email from Steve, and he mentioned that he's going to be releasing an MP3, so keep an eye out. And as soon as I hear from him, I'll post it on the All About Guitar page. He did something with all the guitar players. There's a whole bunch of guitar players, like a guitar orchestra type thing, which is really cool. So anyway, it's going to be – he said it sounded really neat. So I'm looking forward to it, and we'll post that. Anyway, let's start. My guest tonight, very lovely lady, Jessica Barron. She's the founder and executive director of Guitars in the Classroom. And what she's doing is teaching teachers how to teach guitar in the classroom, but not just for the music benefit. And we're going to get into detail about this, but basically the skill sets that you learn learning guitar can benefit the children in learning everything. And it just improves their whole learning experience. So I want to welcome Jessica. It's just a pleasure to have you on the show. This is great.
Thank you, Jeff.
And just to give you more accreditation about it, she has a BA in child development and a master's in clinical psychology. This lady knows what she's talking about. Now, we had talked before on the phone, and I want to start it off with this. When I was in school with Duke Miller at SC in the studio guitar department, one of the things he was very adamant about was that we took a class in guitar pedagogy, which he taught. He felt it was very important that we know how to teach guitar, even though a lot of us were going to be performers. And a lot of the kids at that time in the class with me questioned it, and he said, it's very important. You need to know how to teach. And also, too, he was one of the guys that had told me, if you can teach it, you know it. So one of the things that he had said in the class that really struck home when I was reading on the website guitarsintheclassroom.org, he was talking about that they had done a study, and this was back in the 70s or even actually a little earlier, and one of the people that they had studied was Rachmaninoff, who was a child prodigy. And what they discovered was with child prodigies is the earlier they learn to learn. So the earlier he started, like at four, playing piano, learning piano, the longer they retain that ability to learn. And he thought that was fascinating. He told me he did say, so remember that you can the earlier you did. And I remember for myself, my brother started taking lessons when he was about five and I was like four. And I would listen to him play, and we started on accordion, which was big back when we were kids. And after he practiced and he put the thing down, I would just pick it up and start playing by ear and just picking what he was doing. And the teacher thought I was too young, but then I was developing bad habits. He goes, we better start him because he's going the wrong way. So, which is, I was a rebel back then. What can I say? But anyway, I thought that was really interesting. And he, you know, the fact that you know, I did start earlier, and I found that even later on, I was able to learn other instruments, and I was, it wasn't hard to do that. And I find it, I don't find that necessarily difficult, but you had told me that there's been studies that kind of proven that out. Could you elaborate a little more about that?
Oh, sure. There's a lot of great research out there right now. And if you're listening and you like to go on Facebook, if you go to the NAM Foundation mm-hmm. page, NAM Foundation has been tremendous in supporting this research and getting word out. And every couple of days, they actually post a study or a survey of studies that will give you hard data on how learning music helps anyone become mm-hmm. more capable, better at adapting, better at learning all kinds of different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could pull out a study or two studies, but I'll just say generally, there are a lot of different areas of the brain that light up when you're making music, right? You're using your body, mm-hmm. and you're using both sides of your body, so you're moving to both sides of the brain. And if you look at what the brain does and where it does things, your whole brain is active. And you've got two language centers that are going to light up if you're hearing music and singing along with it or creating melody and you're really focused on that melodic contour. That's a language. So you're going to be lighting up your language centers. Then you've got hand-eye coordination that's going on. Then, and this is a part that really fascinates me, you're listening to the division of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as Steve Vai said last week, music is inherently mathematical, and it really is. So even if there are abstract concepts that escape you, intellectually maybe it's hard if you're nine to get long division, mm-hmm. right? Or algebra, if you're trying to do pre-algebra as a sixth grader, it's very early for the mind to be able to grasp those ideas. But in this country, we push our kids to start adapting and thinking about these math concepts. But a child who's a musician has been dividing time since they clapped a steady beat. Since they divided the beat.
Well, that is division. I mean, that is. Eighth notes, 16th notes.
That's right. It's an intuitive application of math that the child is learning by listening and doing without a lot of intellectual process about it.
Yeah.
So it goes deep in. So when you talk about having started really young, your brain was developing attuned to the math and the language mm-hmm. of music. Mm-hmm. And then that helped you, because that was foundational, it helped you apply those understandings to every other instrument you learned to play. And when you started to speak, you could feel rhythm. And so language, which is really one of your big art forms as a talk radio host, right? Mm-hmm. Language is second nature to you. You could feel the rhythmic accents in the words you were learning and mm-hmm. the emphasis in a sentence. Any sentence you say, if you listen to jazz, it's a lot of sentences. Mm-hmm. It's very
well,
expressive.
Phrasing a lyric, the way you phrase it. And I learned later on in language, I took French in college and stuff, but I've talked to friends of mine that are Chinese, Japanese, mm-hmm. the inflection, the pause changes the whole word.
Right.
It's the same word, but if you pause it, and it can be embarrassing sometimes, you could say the wrong thing, and it's like, and we don't realize it. You have to really listen.
Right.
But it's interesting because, yes, it's just language or music, it's ear training. It's getting the ear, listen, learning to listen.
Right.
And that, that to me, Duke used to tell me, if you can hear it, you can play it. So I guess if you can hear it, you can say it.
That's true. And if you're physically expressing what you're hearing, whether you're beating a drum or you're dancing, you're walking the steps, and you go from a walking pace to a skipping pace, you're expressing rhythm.
Yeah.
And your whole body is wiring it up, and you can recall it just like that.
Well, one of the things I think is cool is you're teaching ukulele and guitar. And I think that's interesting because, A, you have they're rhythmical instruments, but they're melodic instruments, but they're also harmonic instruments where you play chords.
Yeah.
So you integrate all of these different things musically, but also for your ear. Because, like, if you play flute or violin, it's maybe double stops once in a while, but it's mainly single line stuff, linear stuff. But what's kind of cool about guitar and ukulele is you can, besides the single note stuff, and you can also do, can you talk a little more about that?
Sure. Well, let's talk about what little kids can do. Those of you who are listening that are parents or grandparents will probably, you'll be thinking to yourselves, oh yeah, I remember when my kid did that. So little kids, we're going to say 3 to 5 year olds, right? They can feel that steady beat, and it's critical to their language and their reading development that they do that. And they can move two hands together at one level of the body, like clapping their hands to a beat or patting their knees or jumping with both feet to the steady beat. And as they get a little bit older, they can actually divide the actions across the body. And that has to do with the neural pathways that travel between one side of the brain and the other side of the brain. That's development. So a child may be able to clap their hands or dance or beat a drum when they're three. Well, their fine motor skills aren't going to be coming in quite yet. Remember that five-year-olds are just learning how to hold a crayon or a pencil correctly, how to pick up a little safety scissors and coordinate the fine motor in their hand to cut a straight line. And those skills are necessary if you're going to play scales. But they're not necessary if you teach them, children, how to strum and drum on their stringed instrument. And that's rhythmic learning. That can be done very, very young. We're putting ukuleles into preschools. And we're training those preschool teachers in Head Start programs how you get the kids to strum over an open chord with the instrument tuned to a slack key tuning so that it's beautiful and they don't have to have fine motor skills or hand strength. And then the children are singing over those instruments and those notes, and the notes provide them a tonal center. Now they're getting ear training. Now they're pitch matching. It's really powerful. The best thing about the ukulele for little kids is that it's tuned already into a C chord, right? The first thing you learn on an ukulele is how to put one finger on the first string in the third fret and play a C note. Well, little kids can't do that, really little ones. But if you take that high string and you tune it down a step so that it's a G, right, then they strum it and they've got a C chord and they can sing over that. It's in their vocal range. So now they're pitch training. So we're even able to do this with children who are 3 and 4 years old.
Now, and let me ask you something, though. The even before they have the physical dexterity to do certain things, like you're saying, the coordination and stuff, their ear is sophisticated enough. So that's important. I mean, even earlier on, like one of the things I've done as an experiment, and we've talked about this before, is a lot of my friends that have kids and newborns, is I said, even though they're little babies and they're not, you know, they might just be crying or whatever, put different types of music on.
Right.
And Duke had told me this too. He said that your brain is a sponge, and they're just going to absorb all these different types of music. So it's more than just, you know, don't just play what you like, you know, like if you like rock or something like that, play some classical, play some country, jazz, give them everything. And then when they get around four and a half or five, they'll start interpolating all of that. And then you'll start noticing that if they're near a keyboard or something that's melodic, they'll start playing melodies.
That's right.
Because they start assimilating it. So even earlier than they would physically be able to play a ukulele, you know, I'm talking about newborns, you can, they're still learning even at that early age. Am I correct?
That's correct. So babies in utero, they start to develop hearing at 16 weeks.
Wow.
And at 20 weeks, the hearing for most babies or fetuses is pretty well developed. And then they can hear the sound traveling through the amniotic fluid. So they're going to respond to certain resonances. So parents can actually play a guitar right over that pregnant belly. And those sounds are going to travel through to the growing fetus. And there was a study done a very, very long time ago where the father would sing, the father created a loop of a little comforting song, and the mother created a loop. And then that was played over the pregnant belly while the baby was developing. And then they used the same tapes to help the babies fall asleep.
Wow.
Right after they were born. And babies would be fussy, you know, the bewitching hour between 4 and 6 p.m. where kids get really out of sorts. They would just put that tape on, and those children would go to calm. You know, statistically, it was really significant.
I'd heard some friends of mine that were pregnant that said that sometimes they, if they were playing some music or whatever, they could, they were pretty sure the baby was kicking to the beat.
Oh, yeah. My son, I'll tell you about when I was pregnant. I was very involved in classical Indian music while I was pregnant, and I was also playing a lot of guitar and other instruments. And we would go to these concerts. We were hanging around with some really illustrious, the you know, greatest Indian music makers on earth where we were getting to be with them. And every time my baby would hear the tabla, he would start kicking me like crazy, and I'd have to get up and leave the room in the middle of a concert, which you do not do with Indian music. But I had no choice. I had to move. Well, he's now 20, and he's studying classical Indian music at UCSD with the same guy who was a protege for Ravi Shankar, Kartik Seshadri. He's now his pupil at UCSD and is learning Indian music because he came into the world having heard that and heard it in his infancy. And I was actually nursing him at 4 weeks alone in my house, had him in the rocking chair, and I had a beautiful CD on that was recorded by Kavi Chandran Alexandra with Jerry Douglas playing dobro. And he was nursing, and he started humming along in tune to Jerry's dobro solo. Oh, yeah, it was a scary moment. It was crazy.
No, it just shows how powerful the first of all music is in terms of the of learning, but also too, even at that young age, they're responding to it. To me, that's
totally plugged in.
I know for my mom has told me that when we were real little, and she always listened to the radio, so it was on all the time. And she was, so I'm pretty sure that's where we were picking up stuff even at an early age.
Well, you just think about how quickly babies develop, right? And then that keeps going, right? Birth to six, this is one of the things I think you were getting at. Birth to six, what's happening to the neural pathways in the brain is called rapid myelination. And it's that there's a sheath of fat cells that's going around the nerves, and it makes it so that thoughts can transfer, they can move very quickly. And so the more stimulus that that baby is getting, it's going in very quickly, especially in those language centers, birth to six. And what the brain does after that is it starts to train itself down to the pathways that have been traveled the most. So what language teachers will tell you is if you want a child to learn a language, expose them to that language, immerse them in it before they're six because they'll acquire all of those sounds. You know, I did. I have a parenting book. I've written a lot of books, but one of my books is a parenting book called Your Musical Child, and it's. I had to do a developmental chart. I was. The publisher just said you have to show people what's normal, and so you can go in there and look at what the research said at that point in time. And I took a long time to write that book, so it was about 3 years worth of research goes into that developmental chart. But basically, it said kids really generally don't carry a tune or keep time until they're about 17 months old, and that came out of a study at Tufts. But my child was doing that much, much earlier. So if my kid did it, everybody else's kids could be doing that as well. It's just a matter of that exposure. So when you talk about kids putting it all together at 4 and 5, you bet. You bet they are. And if you give them an instrument, like a lot of kids come in and they know what they want to play. They'll say to their parent, I want to play the violin. their parent is looking at this tiny little person, and they're trying to reconcile the idea that this child is still dropping food on the floor at breakfast, and they're saying they want to play violin, which is very complicated. But, you know, if you work with Suzuki or Child Bloom, they have ways of getting kids on those instruments early that are developmentally appropriate.
Yeah. No, I it's interesting, too, the fact that music seems to be a much more affable way. The kids respond more to it. I remember my mom was a school nurse, so she used to read all these articles and stuff when she was over in the this was years ago when I was in school. And she had said that they did a study where they tried at an early age, they taught the kids like advanced algebra. And they started teaching them this, you know, nothing to do with music. They were doing this, and they started developing grown-up emotional problems by trying to do it that early. And they had a lot of problems.
Oh, boy.
And it's interesting because music, they respond so much to the music, and it's more of a, it's not basic, like simple basic, but it's like inherent, it's like core.
It's core.
It's part of our being and our soul,
that's right.
I believe. And I think that's why they respond more to that, mm-hmm. and that in developing that their skill set so that they can do the other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes sense to me, that the music will get them to that point where they can handle the more complicated, you know, learning, you know, subjects and stuff, but in a way that's more organic or more. I don't know the word.
It's very natural, right?
Right. Now, which brings up, I had posted this up. I had shared this. You had a graph. It was like a circular graph that talks about the basic educational thing. I know that the schools were talking about that they wanted a skill set.
Sure.
Can you go into that and talk? I know you can't see it on the air, but...
But they can find it on our website.
Yes. On the guitarsintheclassroom.org.
It's actually on the homepage. I put it down at the bottom because so many people are using this graphic right now that I just had to make it easy for you to get to. So if you just go to
It's a big circle, and it has it's like
green and yellow.
Yeah.
Down at the bottom. And I developed that actually with two other educators. We worked pretty hard on it to figure it out. Because showing what's going on in education right now and how music fits into that, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of ways music fits into it. This isn't it. It's just that's one window. But it's apt because if you're in a state that's Common Core, California is, many, many states are. Some states have dropped
what's
out.
What's Common Core mean?
Okay, so in the United States, we didn't have parity across the states for what educational standards were. So if your sister lives in Louisiana and is raising her kids in Louisiana, they're not learning the same things as kids in Washington State are not learning the same mm-hmm. things that kids in Tennessee are learning. And so the government said, well, we want to have some way of knowing how the schools are doing and how the kids are doing. So let's create national standards, not just every state's got its own set. So a bunch of very smart people got together, and some of them were amazing business leaders who understand how you have to apply the ability to learn to the real world. And they said, well, what do children actually need to know how to do to survive in the world the way the world is now? Not the way the world was when you were in grade school and your dad had a job that he kept for whatever, 30 years or 40 years, and your mother was a stay-at-home mom and then went back to school or to get a degree or worked part-time, or maybe your mother was in some sort of service profession. That's an outdated model that doesn't work anymore, right? So men and women work equally, and they're changing jobs all the time because the job market's changing all the time. And if you're in technology, what you need to do may be very different. After 2 years, you may have to be able mm-hmm. to transition to a different, you know, or people that are in sales. Well, you may be selling one thing for 5 years and need to know how to sell something completely unrelated. How do you transfer, right? How do you adapt? So Common Core is fascinating to me because it honors how we learn and it sets us up for being able to adapt with the world around us. So we're asked to not memorize facts and regurgitate facts. You know, multiplication is no longer about 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, etc. It's about what does it mean to take numbers and play with them in these different ways. How can we group the numbers? How can we understand the numbers by deconstructing them, not just memorizing a chart? Because if you really understand how to work with numbers, whether you become a computer science major and you have to apply that to writing code, or whether you're going into business and you want to think about scaling out a business model, or you want to look at pricing structures, if you can think about the numbers instead of think of yourself as I'm good at math or bad at math, you're going to do well, right? So Common Core are taking the things we need to know and the things we need to know how to do and creating two sets of standards, one that's really hard knowledge and one that's learning and applying the learning to the big world. I hope that makes some sense.
Yeah.
All right. So now if you look at what we're doing, what Guitars in the Classroom is doing with learning, we say, let's take those instruments into the general classroom. Let's teach teachers how to play them and to sing pretty well in tune, and to understand the language of music and how we pour English language and other languages too into the music and pair those two languages together, and then use the power of song to fuel academic learning in all the different content areas using students' songwriting, using traditional musical forms, using musical forms from different cultures, and setting that teacher free to pour all of the stuff they're teaching through music to the kids. And the kids love it because they're fully engaged. Now, let's teach the teachers how to have the kids hold and share instruments so that they're strumming and they're creating rhythm and they're creating harmony and they're singing what they need to learn. And let me tell you, there are no behavior problems. Kids want to play those instruments. So they're the kids who would normally get bored, they're really bright, and they can't just stay down to what is being dished out to everybody. They need to move. They need to shift. They're so compelled by these instruments, and they're challenged in different ways, that the learning's very active for them.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, the child that is language deprived, maybe they're coming from a family where people aren't home very much, people don't talk much, they haven't had really a chance to learn good conversational skills, they're singing. And songs are full of repetition, and they're full of new vocabulary. So their language skills are growing while they're playing the instrument. And there isn't any of this what we call drill and kill. There isn't the teacher saying, well, you guys need to learn these 20 words this week because we're going to have a test and I need you to be ready for the standardized test in May. We have to drive our test scores up here at the school or we're going to lose our status and we're going to get black marked and all these bad things will happen to our school. So you have to be smart. You have to. It pulls all the pressure out. It lowers the anxiety level in the classroom so the kids are having fun again.
Yeah.
But they're still accomplishing their language goals. They just don't realize they're learning twice as fast because they're having twice as much fun.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, like when you're having fun, it just time flies. I mean, it's just, it, you know, like if you're really in, I know for myself when I was recording or I was doing a session, sometimes I've been 10 hours. I've been sitting here for 10 hours, but I was having a blast.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, and one of the things that's interesting, too, is that interaction between the kids. When Duke was doing the beginning guitar class at SC, when he was the head of the department, one of the things he really stressed was feedback. So he would have the, after so many, you know, weeks, he had them play because he felt the audience feedback. And I think the same thing in the classroom because they're interacting. So this kid's playing with the other kid. This one's singing, this one's playing, or they're playing against each other. So that interaction, that it's a similar type of feedback. I don't know if
that's exactly right. So in Common Core, that's called collaborative conversation. And if teachers are looking up what standards they need to teach, they fall under what's called speaking and listening skills. So I was mentioning children that come from language-poor families. That's really, really critical. We have a really high population in L.A., very, very high. San Diego as well, where we're based, but we're, you know, we're all over the place. But our laboratories are basically here in L.A. Kids who are coming from other cultures where music is inherent in the culture, but they haven't heard a lot of English, and maybe English isn't spoken at home. They need to pick up English pretty quickly, and they can do that better if they're musically inclined and they're musically engaged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you were mentioning the collaborative, so the social skills, the can you go in a little bit more of that? Because that's important.
Sure.
Because I think with the advent of all, I mean, I don't mean to be critical, but, you know, we're on the computers a lot. Where a lot of kids are on video games. I've noticed that there's a lot less interaction. I mean, in mm-hmm. school, yes, you still have to interact with kids.
Yeah.
But a lot of times outside of school, when I was a kid, there were no computers. There was no internet. We went out and played
mm-hmm.
with other people or my brother or relatives or whatever. And now a lot of kids are home. And also, too, it's dangerous sometimes out there. I mean, a lot of kids have to, you know, parents are afraid to let their kids out. We used to, you know, in the old days, we'd run around the street.
Yep.
We didn't have to worry about being kidnapped and stuff.
Yeah.
But that social skill, there was a, you know, when we were doing that, we were interacting. And
right.
can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's
sure.
important. I think that for people that have kids, that
right.
you want them to be able to work with people right. and be able to adapt to the world.
So imagine this, the public school classroom, let's make it a second grade and let's put 28 kids in that class.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big number, but that's what's going on. That's the reality. So figure that probably half of those kids, really, nobody's really taught them how to have a meaningful conversation, you know, maybe even more than that. So when you're teaching collaborative conversation, you're teaching the kids how to create effective partner conversation, right? So teachers that we're working with, Guitars in the Classroom is very privileged. We're working with the President's Committee on Arts and Humanities in the Turnaround Arts Initiative, which you can look up online. It's great stuff. Turnaround Arts, you just do a search for that. We're in that school in San Diego, Luther Burbank Elementary. And then we're also working with the San Diego School District's initiative called Learning Through the Arts, or Title I for the Arts, where the district is allocating $3 million over 2 years to work in our lowest performing and highest poverty schools to bring the arts into an integration with academic learning. So we're in both of those programs.
Mm-hmm.
And in both schools, we're teaching a lot of collaborative conversation, right? So the music gives the kids the chance to partner up, and they have to learn things. So some of the teachers at our Title I for the Arts school, Normal Heights Elementary, created the four L's, which you teach the kids. Lean in, look in your partner's eyes, lower your voice, and listen. Right? So just moving through the four L's gets them tuned into each other. And then I have another acronym I'm working on for AWARE, which is to attune, really to pay attention to your partner, right? And then wonder, what are they thinking? A, ask. Mm-hmm. Ask them, what are you thinking? What do you think about that, right? So we're moving through this. R is to reflect. And then we're going to go to E, and we're going to express. So we're not just blurting stuff out. We're actually processing what we're hearing the other person say.
Well, it's interesting, the four L's.
Yeah.
Because, and I think a lot of the listeners will understand this. Playing in a band, that's pretty important.
Right.
Listening. You'll have to say the four L's again.
Yeah, but you lean in, you're making eye contact,
yeah.
and you're getting close to that. Think about like Clarence Clemens and Bruce Springsteen leaning into each other when
right.
they're doing those
right.
lines.
And then, you know, and the same thing, especially listening to the other instruments. A lot of, you know, when you hear other people, especially in a session situation, you got to figure out what works. And you just can't play. You have to kind of listen to what everybody else is doing
mm-hmm.
and then figure out what fits. The four L's, it's basically how to be a successful player in a band or a side man.
Right.
That's right there. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So what we're doing is we're breaking down musical tasks for children. So we might say to them, take a steady beat rhythm
mm-hmm.
and find two places in your body you can express it and share that with your partner. Your partner will share theirs. And then you make a pattern together. You have to create that rhythm pattern, and then you're going to move through the pattern. And when you're done with your collaborative conversation, you've created some music, and then you're ready to turn and teach it to the rest of the class.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we know they were listening is that they can play it right back to you. Then we're scaffolding on top of that rhythm, melody. Okay, so we're working with pitches. Now we're going to feed in the the vocabulary, and now we're going to feed in the big theme of the lesson. So the kids can take a lesson in health and create a song about taking care of their bodies. Mm-hmm. Just from that musical activity, working in partners, and their conversational skills have boosted way up. And now they've got new vocabulary, and now they're excited because they're going to perform it for the whole class.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting.
And it seems, too, that all of that being comfortable, communicating, and those social skills, it brings up the self-esteem. The kids are not afraid. They're not like, you know.
Right. Right,
I think
exactly.
That's vital. So they're unabashed. They're not afraid to do things because fear is always the killer.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Self-doubt.
And especially if kids are in a district where they haven't had any music in the early grades and the first chance they get at it is fourth grade or fifth grade, they don't have the basic musicality instilled in them. And when they're given the opportunity to start to learn to make music, they're starting from a place of deficit because they've learned so much other stuff. They're good at other things, but music is a place they feel lost. And so there's a lot of self-conscious behavior. When I started teaching at Luther Burbank, we're in the barrio, we're 100% poverty, over 70% of the kids are language learners. And I started with the fifth grade class, Mr. Avalos's class, and these kids were so shy. Oh, they were so scared to try anything. And they eventually, you know, my persistence, I think, and Mr. Avalos's enthusiasm finally wore down some of their resistance. But it was when they got ukuleles in their hands that it all started changing. And they started getting braver. And some of them really wanted to learn the instrument. There's a really interesting psychologist, Carol Dweck, who wrote a great book called Mindset. And this book's been around for some time. But in Mindset, she talks about how the kids who are successful are the ones with grit. They're the ones who won't give up. They love something enough, or they care about succeeding at it enough that they will continue to apply themselves, and they won't back down when they hit a challenge. They'll rise to meet the challenge. Music is so motivating just in and of itself. Like you said, it's natural. People feel better when they're playing music, right? You breathe more when you're singing. You feel happy and expanded when you're playing your instrument. These kids develop grit around playing ukulele. So Jason Mraz is the artist who's the mentor at that school. And then we also work with his protege, Cody Lovas, who's only 17 and is just this remarkable young man, singer, songwriter, guitarist. So Cody would come in and meet with these kids. And then Jason came in and they had rewritten his song, I'm Yours, to memorize the order of operations. When he came in, they were shy, but he encouraged them and their courage grew and grew to the point where at the end of the year, they just got out there on a stage and performed this thing and were so proud of themselves. And it was just over the course of a year of having music as a learning tool and an incentive and adult role models to come in and say, you guys can do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always found in dealing with children, I've friends of mine that are teachers, I've gone in and interacted with them. And I think the program, playing an instrument, does that. You never talk down to them. And with music, even though one is, you know, the teacher's teaching them, you're on an equal basis. You play this, you play that. It's not one above the other. There's no, you know, there's no caste system, so to speak. Secondly, if you and it's not with just kids in general, if you make it challenging and give them like a problem to solve. So like, you know, I what would you put here? What kind of melody would you put over there? So you make them, then it becomes, that's fun.
Really
and
fun.
And it seems to that they responded. And that's what I'm seeing from what you're talking about.
Totally.
The classes and how they're teaching.
Yeah.
It's like a challenge and it's like an adventure. Because like, okay, well, how am I going to, and then it's cool. And creating is always cool.
Right. It's open-ended. There isn't a wrong answer.
Right.
So when you take a group of four kids and we have a bunch of fabulous musical instrument sponsors that help Guitars in the Classroom along, and anybody who's interested, if you go on our website, you can look at the business sponsors drop-down, and you'll see who all these phenomenal companies are. This is how we can do it, because the music product industry mm-hmm. supports this work. They want to have the next generation. So when we have a group of four kids, one is going to play the ukulele or the guitar, one is going to play percussion, one is going to choreograph, and one is going to be the dedicated singer. In other words, sing, do not stop. And the other three may sing along, but we know we've got one on track. And each one of those children is going to put in creatively an idea that the other ones will then learn and mirror. And that mirroring, that humanity, that learning together, it just creates joy. So, yes, the conversation's happening. Yes, mm-hmm. the creativity is going on. And then, like you said, performance, the feedback. When the kids get to do this for each other, their peers are so excited. They applaud for them and they tell them good job and they all want to do it again.
Yeah.
And the nice part is the teachers can sing and play. The teachers are the role models. They come in and they don't have to be great. They mm-hmm. just have to manage a few chords. If they can just do the smallest amount on the instrument, they can say to the kids, hey, I'm a beginner too. Will you guys be supportive? Encourage me to do this and then I'll try it some more. And the kids, once you flip that role and the teacher doesn't have to be the expert, the kids actually take pride in being able to help their teacher learn to do something. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's nice. I love what we're doing in LA Unified. LA Unified just rocks.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's just so exciting. This district just is so great. You know, in a lot of places, you know, certain states have not cut music. Massachusetts, for one, is doing things right, and the kids still have music ed. But, you know, a lot of California got hard hit and drastic budget cuts, and a lot of districts cut their K-3 general music offerings. And they said, well, we can still do something, but it's going to be a string program at grade 4 or 5. And then those kids will have to opt into that. And then if they like it, then they can go on in middle school and high school. But the feeding pool for those optional musical experiences gets smaller and smaller if children don't have early learning. Well, in Los Angeles Unified, there's music. Those little guys are getting music here. We have 94 music educators in the district. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not enough, but boy, oh boy, it's a lot more than what's happening in other places. And
but they're going to multiple schools.
They are.
How much do you think they're reaching out? About estimating how many kids.
These people are heroes, okay? They're just heroes, and I've been training them all to play guitar and ukulele. So the district, I think right now that the teachers that we have, the 94, I don't want to say this wrong, but I know that the music program is impacting something like 650,000 kids. This is a huge district.
Lot of kids.
This is the second largest district in the United States. Mm-hmm. Second, right? So it's second only to, I think, New York City. Mm-hmm. So, which is, you know, 5 boroughs and blah, blah. So these music teachers are running to 4 to 6 schools a week, but they're managing it. I don't know how they do it. So now we've got them on ukulele. We've started the transition to guitar. I've got wonderful artists helping us out. Lawrence Juber, incredible fingerstyle guitarist, is such an inspiration to these teachers. And Brent Paschke, who's been Pharrell's guitarist for mm-hmm. 15 years. Brent is helping me here. John O'Kennedy, who's a local teacher, is coming in and helping me. So, and we have a great trainer here, Janice Vale, who helps. So we go in, and the district gives us 90 minutes once a month to work with the teachers. And now they're using ukulele instead of just the recorder and the xylophones and percussion. Now the kids are getting string experience in the early grades. They're transitioning to guitar, and we're looking forward this year to having certificated music educators on faculty become our music integration trainers of the general classroom teachers. So this way we can scale out and expand music's role into the general classroom so that mm-hmm. the children get music ed and music integration.
And you're also expanding outside of just, I mean, you're going out of the all around the country. Right?
Oh, it's pretty wild and wonderful what's going on. Yeah, we've got a new program that's going to start in Asheville, North Carolina. And our program in Brooklyn is waking back up again. And, you know, we haven't been able to do that for the last 3 years. That's coming back. You know, we're lots of basically, if you have classroom experience and you understand what the classroom teacher has to get done and you're a pretty good guitar player, you don't have to be great. But you have to be a wonderful, non-judgmental teacher. You've mm-hmm. got to be patient and really love the learning process. And you need to be a good, strong singer. You don't have to showboat. You just have to be able to hold a tune and coach those teachers to get them comfortable mm-hmm. singing. You can actually help spread the work. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't take a master's degree in music. I would rather hire somebody who really has a heart for human beings and can transmit a developmental alternative method to people right. so they can learn gradually than somebody that's going to go in there and try to teach people to play scales. Because these are teachers, a lot of them are mid-career or late career, and learning to play a musical instrument, that takes grit on their part.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
No, I get what you're saying, because I remember in a lot of teachers, even in the music department when I was in school, there was a lot of frustrated musicians that didn't make it professionally, and they were very judgmental. And it's like, you need to be like this. And they were very rigid. It was a very rigid. I mean, Duke changed a lot of that later on. And I think now it's a lot more open. But, you know, a lot of classical teachers in the early days, very strict, controllable, you know, very controlling. And it was kind of a negative thing, like, you got to be like this,
yeah.
not anything else. And what it seems you're talking about, and the way the requirement that you want of the teachers that teach the teachers or the teachers
yeah.
themselves, it's like, that's okay. If you're going to play those notes, okay, that's cool.
Look at it this way. A lot of the teachers that come into our program from classroom, not the music educators, mm-hmm. but the general classroom teachers, a lot of them are people who have loved music fiercely their whole lives, but they had a traumatic early experience, or they were outshone by a sibling. So the stories we hear at the beginning of a year when we do the training for the first time are typically, I loved music, but when I tried out for choir, I didn't make it, and I never tried again. Or I was in a talent show, and everybody laughed at me, and I never sang in public again. Or I had a brother who was a really great player, or a parent. I've had lots of teachers who had like parents that were opera singers, where there was somebody so musically gifted in the family that that was their special talent. And so as a child, this person said, well, I better get good at baseball, you know, or I'm going to be good at something else because I don't want to compete with my sibling.
I mean, my parents both played music. They weren't professional or anything, but it was really important that we played. But I met a lot of people that are professional musicians and their kids don't play at all. And I don't understand that. I just, like, why wouldn't they play? I mean, yeah, I don't know if I'd want to, if I had a 3-year-old, I want him to be playing my 1959, whatever, you know, or picking that up because it might break it. But at the same point, you would think that more people would, I know what you're saying. There is a kind of a gap there, but, to me, it would be like everybody would be involved.
Well, okay. What's really typical in parenting is there's something that matters a lot to us because it went through our brains, our lives. So it's a value we have, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that our child does not suffer the same way or that our child will aspire to the same thing. And so we have this need to get our child on track. Well, that becomes an expectation, and the last thing kids want to do is disappoint their parents. It's really scary to let your parent down because children love with their whole heart, and they don't want to be a source of disappointment or sorrow for their parent, right? So if their parent is a great musician and their parent says, you need to practice and you need to do it this way, and the child is having difficulty, their learning style might be different. Maybe the parent has an auditory gift. They've got a musical ear. Their kid didn't get that. Maybe their kid came in and their visual is spatial, and they're going to learn a different way.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a real disconnect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So a child would rather not disappoint and not try than try and then be chastised because they've fallen short of the mark.
Yeah. No, I can see that. If you know, when I was in college and I was learning orchestration and stuff, I probably would not have been a good teacher for somebody because I was really into that. I was into counterpoint. I was in all that stuff. And it's like, you know, teaching somebody basic guitar at that time, to me, it would be like way, I'm over here. I don't know if I can go down, you know.
Right.
As I get older, I see more commonality. And and a lot of things that I've done, I find it's very important to just simplify everything.
Right.
You get better communication, not just with kids, but in general. So if you can explain things in a very simple and concise way so that everybody gets it, everybody's on the, you know, on the same page, and you move forward and work, whatever, the, you know, especially in technical stuff,
mm-hmm.
you always have to kind of not dumb it down, but basically get everybody on the page and get them comfortable. So you're always dealing with analogies. So you're basically trying to find the common ground so you can communicate
right.
and get the job done.
Yeah.
You know.
And the better listener you are as a teacher, the more that you can ask a question and then really listen to the answer, the more that your learners can unlock for you the mystery of how they learn.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear how people learn best, you can start to do the creative work of delivering
right.
the instruction in a language that they will receive.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of music teachers are musically gifted people. And so when they sit down to teach a lesson, they're using their learning strength, their own learning strength. So mm-hmm. they may say, well, just do this. And their hands do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they say, repeat after me.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who's sitting with them doesn't have the same level of auditory ability. So they actually need to see it written out, or they need to clap it first, and then they need to watch a hand cue, and then they need to hear it and hear it again, and then they can do it.
Right.
But this is why it's so good that your teacher insisted on guitar pedagogy, right? We need to take that a lot farther. If there was a school guitarists could go to learn how to differentiate instruction for people who learn differently than they did,
mm-hmm.
we'd have so many more successful guitar educators. But that's the guitar teacher falls into this funny little kind of slips between the cracks. Music educators need to study how people learn.
Mm-hmm.
But MFA students who are becoming fine artists don't necessarily need to study that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come through a very competitive classical music education and you didn't take pedagogy, or you took a little bit, you'll come out and you want everybody to come up to your level. You want to create the great flautist or the great cellist. But that's going to leave out, you know, 99 of your 100 students are going to fall short of that mark.
Yeah.
So the music education person has skills.
Yeah.
But what about the guitar teacher? How are they supposed to learn this stuff?
I look at it as you get them. For me, I would look, and in general, not just with music, in general with any child, is get them, you know, familiar, get them set up with some tools and skills and let them take off. So
yeah.
Like, yeah, here's a guitar. This is how you play it. You know, here's some chords, here's some notes. Listen, you know, give them a lot of ear training. I really do believe play a lot of CDs, play a lot of music. So
mm-hmm.
you hear it. So you get an idea what it's about, and then take it. Go somewhere else with it. Make it beyond.
But see, that's cool. You're cool. You understand that there's something inherently creative in your student, and you're going to give them room to spread out and follow what they're hearing and thinking about. You're not telling them there's only one way to do this. And if more music teachers found ways of doing that,
mm-hmm.
I think they would find their students really excelling. And like, we got great music teachers in LA Unified, and a bunch of them that I know of are doing exactly this. And if you look at the choral director in New York for PS22, and you look at those PS22 videos of those children singing, they are just singing their hearts and souls out, and their director is just alive because he's freeing
right.
their imaginations
right.
to rise up to this thing.
Now, I warned you.
Yeah,
it goes fast. We're already out of time, and we're running late. I just want to let everybody know guitarsintheclassroom.org is the place to check this out. And also, too, even though your program is basically teaching teachers to teach, I encourage parents, look at some of the stuff, check it out, because some of the stuff you can do, I think you can do. And especially when they're really young, it's so important because they'll pick it up there's no such thing, I believe, as a tone deaf kid. I think that that's just because you're not listening enough. If they listen to music and they're exposed to music, it'll all happen.
Right.
I want to thank you so much. Obviously,
thanks.
You're going to have to come back because we just barely scratched the surface on this. But I thank you so much for showing all of this. And I think it's really great what you're doing.
Thank you so much for your support. And what a fun conversation. Anyone who's interested in volunteering with us, just go to the website and fill out the contact us form. And we're really happy to work with you.
Mm-hmm. And check out the site. There's all sorts of cool stuff up there. And that's it. We're done. I can't believe we're already out of time.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
Anyway, everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.